Well, hi, kids. Ted Asfergadu from Popdose here, and thrilled to be talking with Casey Crescenzo of the band The Deer Hunter. As I say during my interview with Casey, I wasn't familiar with his music, but after hearing The Deer Hunter's newest release, called Migrant, I wanted to hear more and know more about the band's lead singer and songwriter. What I found in the course of our interview was a fascinating journey of quitting the music business, getting kicked out of his previous band, becoming homeless, and then finding a new direction with his main musical project, The Deer Hunter. So here comes the Popdose interview with Casey Crescenzo of The Deer Hunter. So I was looking at your biography, and do you feel like music is like the mafia? Once you get in, you never get out?
I definitely think that it is that way. I think once you feel the high of being creative, I guess art is like the mafia, that once you're in, you're never out. And that trying to leave it would, I'm sure, in both scenarios, be very painful.
I would imagine, yeah.
So it's definitely something that once you've given yourself to it and you've felt that response, whether it's an internal or external response, it's tough to imagine just leaving it and going and doing something else that is completely unrelated.
Well, I think that your own biography is something where you have a musical pedigree, or your parents met at the Record Plant Studio in Sausalito. This is a recording studio where, you know, some huge albums were made. Prince recorded there, Rick James, Stevie Wonder, Fleetwood Mac, Metallica, and even Mariah Carey. So how did the Record Plant affect your approach to music?
My parents met there. My mom was, she actually sang on a Rick James record.
Really?
I forget which one. But she sang on a Rick James record. She, a lot of the times, would be called in to sing harmonies either with Michael McDonald or just different people as a studio vocalist, because she was part of, I forget if it's a guild or a union or exactly what it was at the time, but she was just kind of on call. My father was there working as both a technician and an engineer, so just because of the amount of work constantly going on, they brushed shoulders a lot. And eventually, I think it was after my father had left the Record Plant and was kind of, at that time, you know, had turned his apartment into a tape studio with just, I'm sure he had a ton of synthesizers. I'm sure it was a very hot room that he lived in. But basically, the fact that they were so steeped in the recording world, in traditional, more classic recording compared to what is done now, the mentality is such a different mentality, and the mentality of analog recording is something that they brought to me, and I feel like that's so much more the idea, the production side of it being based on the vibe and the feel and the performance and what you get out of it when your eyes are closed instead of staring at the screen and reading what the computer is telling you is right or wrong. That approach to it really influenced me growing up, and actually growing up, we always had studios in our house, and it was tape. And I remember when I was 13, I was still using tape, and my dad would come in and say, you know, this would be a lot easier if you would just use the computer. And I was kind of afraid of it, because from the time I think when I was 9 was when we had the first 4-track that I was comfortable using. And from there, he was always kind of staying on the heels of technology, and I was on his heels. So a few years after he got into using hard disk recording was when I actually jumped onto that. But their mentality and their creativity and their approach to music in general as an art form and not a product, is was definitely the single most important thing for me as a musician and creative person growing up.
Yeah, I think that you touch on something that's really key in the recording process and how it's changed in a few decades since the rise of digital recording. And that is, a lot of people have this mentality of, oh, we'll just fix it in post. It's not really capturing the song as this thing, this moment where the musicians, the words, the music, it all kind of comes together in this one moment, and you happen to capture it perfectly in the recording process, versus like, oh, that drum track, you were slightly off. Just a little bit. We can fix that. Don't worry about it.
And then the problem that happens is there are so many layers to a lot of records, especially the records that I make. There's so many layers. So if you take that micromanaging approach to it, that eventually by the time you're done with all of those layers, you'll end up with something that's very clinical. And you might not really think about it the whole time. You'll think, oh, well, these drums need to be perfect. Now the bass in it needs to be absolutely perfect, and it's got to be perfect with the drums, and you just start overthinking everything. And then on the other end, maybe you have something that's an incredibly tight and technically proficient sounding set of performances, but it's not really the personalities of the people who played the instruments anymore.
Yeah, it just seems like it has that kind of that sheen that it's almost like robots playing in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Take that human element out. I was looking at your career arc, and you've had a very up and down career. You left the band Illusion, and you've been kicked out of a band, and I'm talking about the Receiving End of Sirens. But yeah. The band's wiki page on the Receiving End of Sirens says that you're back with them, and yet your bio suggests that the Deer Hunter is your only project at this point. Can you clear up the confusion on my part?
Yeah, well, basically, I was doing this band as a side project, but really as a hobby while I was in the Receiving End of Sirens. To get out all the music that wouldn't fit with that band, because I really just love writing and being, as active as I can be. Uh-huh. And after a few years of intense touring and real extreme personal friction, they asked me to leave, and I did. The band, about a year and a half or 2 years after I left, the band broke up. And the Receiving of the Sirens, that is, they broke up. Uh-huh. And then they asked me to play their farewell shows, and I played their farewell shows, and we had such an amazing time, and there was a pretty big reconnection personally. And so the band didn't necessarily enter, it was this strange sort of, being kept alive by machines sort of time for the band. It was like a coma. It didn't really die. It just entered into this weird coma state, and every couple years they're revived for either, a festival or this or that. And they made it clear to me that they want me to be a part of whatever reunion type thing is done whenever it's done. So I guess in that sense, I'm a member of that band in whatever version of a band it exists, but it's not an active thing. There's no music being made, there's no phone calls being made to make plans. It's really just a indefinite hiatus in the most literal meaning of that phrase.
It's almost like an on-call part-time job. So
yeah, exactly.
Hey, can you work? Sure, yeah, I'll come down. But your bio is chock full of some really interesting information, and what I took away from that is that you seem like a really creative guy. You've got a lot of grand ideas, and you're certainly talented in multimedia production. And to me, that's a considerable skill set, and doesn't seem like the kind of thing that would push you into homelessness. And yet, you were living on the streets in Boston for a number of months. What happened there?
I basically hit a wall emotionally. I was living on my own, and I was hoping that I wasn't going to live on my own romantically. And one thing led to another, and I kind of found myself in an almost emotional blackout for a number of months, where just the things that I had left home maybe 3 months earlier, I didn't want my parents to think that I had failed. So the idea of coming home wasn't really an option in my mind, and it was more a stubborn just, well, if I've left, and if I've left because I've actually, if I've moved across the country because I told them that I can make this happen, I can't just come back groveling. So I kind of lost all of my opportunities at the time. I had a few job interviews lined up for either film editing or CGI or a few different things. And I just emotionally, because of recent romantic catastrophes, I didn't really know what I was doing. And I was very young and I didn't know how to cope with it because it was the first time it had really happened to me. And so what ended up happening was I stopped paying my rent. I stopped paying my utilities. And I was evicted from my apartment because they told me that if I just left, then they wouldn't. Basically, they would just take my security deposit. They would try and pay down as much as they could of the utilities, and they wouldn't. I mean, but I guess press charges. They wouldn't press charges on me as long as I just left, took my stuff, and kind of, you know, let them get the apartment back up to code. And then I didn't really know what to do, so I had a computer, I had a laptop someone bought for me when I had left home, and that was it, and my bag of clothes. And for 2 months, 2.5 months, I was just sort of getting by on either a bench or coffee shops, and then I would always message home that, oh, everything's fine. And it wasn't until years later that I was sitting at dinner with my mom and my parents. I haven't really touched on it with my dad, but you know, I let her know, you know, that time when I said everything was okay, I was actually homeless.
Wow.
And her jaw just kind of dropped, like, how could you kind of like, how could you do that to us, you know?
Right.
How could you, because on some level they still obviously consider me their son and their little boy, and so there is the part of me that they would think is doing bad things to their son.
It does, actually. You know, how dare you do that to my baby?
Exactly. So, but then I was able to get a security deposit squared away for an apartment in Boston, and I went there and I tried to put on my best face, and it was with these three girls that were living there, and they said, we don't want another girl to live here. And I went there, I tried to be as charismatic as I could. And but then I, you know, looking back on it, the night that I went there, and I said, do you guys mind if I sleep here tonight? And they said, well, we don't know if you're going to be living here yet. And I just kind of borderline begged. And then the next morning, I signed the lease and gave them the money. And as soon as I signed the lease, I told them I didn't have a job. And then one of the girls told me that she was a women's manager at Urban Outfitters and could get me a job as a cashier.
Oh, all right.
And so I went and got a job as a cashier, and that's where I met the guys in the band, the Receiving End of Sirens.
Uh-huh.
That's where we met.
So they were all working at Urban Outfitters?
Yeah, one. Okay. Well, two of them were. One of them was working in the housewares department. The other was in men's. And then... one of the other guys in the band was just going to Northeastern full-time, and the other guy, the guitar player, was just kind of like me, just trying to work and get by. And so then eventually I ended up moving into a two-bedroom apartment with them, and there were six of us in this two-bedroom apartment. It was honestly like one of the best times of my life, probably because it immediately followed such a terrible time. So anything seemed like the best thing in the world, but... it all led up to meeting those guys, and then that all led up to here. So I can't possibly look back and be upset about any of it.
Turning a corner is one of the themes in that story, where you had gone to a very dark and a very low place, being homeless and certainly having a relationship fall apart, and then deciding at some point that, you know what, I got to get my act together, and I could stay on this track of sleeping in park benches and coffee houses, or I could put a comb through my hair, put on my best smile, and say, hey, I'd love to live here. And then I like how you just assumed the clothes. Do you mind if I just, you know, stay here tonight? So we've established that the Receiving End of Sirens is your part-time on-call job, and the Deer Hunter is your main project. And you've been recording rather intricate narratives in the form of a series of EPs. And I was listening to Act One, the Lake South and the River North, just the other day. And to me, it's really sort of operatic. There's elements of progressive rock, but overall, to me, it was a very accomplished set of songs. And now when I compare that EP to your new album, Migrant, the songs on Migrant are less complex, they're more compact in scope, but they still have like this epic and soaring quality. Was this kind of a conscious change, or is this just how the songs came out?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think the conscious change was knowing that I didn't want the record to be a conceptual record. And that's just in the sense that I don't want it to be, it doesn't deserve the branding of concept record in the same way. I mean, it is a conceptual record in the sense that it's meant to be an album. It's meant, these songs are meant to coexist together, mm-hmm. and they represent a broader topic than themselves. But because of that conscious decision, those songs do kind of need to be a little bit more sprawling and grand, and I, you know, in some cases long, mm-hmm. to convey whatever idea is trying to be conveyed. But in this case, these songs individually, these moments weren't meant to be conveying more than the ideas they were meant to be conveying, uh-huh. which I guess on a grander scale are smaller because they're simply about me. But there wasn't any real conscious decision to say, you know, I'm going to write smaller, more compact, more under 5 minute songs. It really did just come out that way. And it was something that I was actually really, I felt very accomplished by, because I felt I was able to convey a similar amount of depth and melody, and lyrically I was able to say what I wanted to say, mm-hmm. and it didn't necessarily take me as long to say it. And in the past, writing music, it has taken me longer, and the idea of being concise or being transparent was very hard for me. But maybe it's just because of how this record is very much from the heart and honestly about myself. You know, those things being said can be, saying things very transparently and blatantly gets the job done much quicker, I suppose.
Sometimes when you're asked to write something long form, it can sometimes be a little bit easier because you're unburdened by this, you know, by the scope of the work. It's just like, okay, just go ahead and write and see what comes right. out. And then other times when you're, I wouldn't say forced, but asked to write something a little bit more succinct, it can be a lot harder because you're suddenly having to throw out ideas and words and just merge this thing into something that you're thinking, oh, but if I could just say more.
That's totally very true for the challenge of trying to write something or of trying to say something in fewer words.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and I do think that's just a quality, or that's just an example of, I think, personal growth is the ability to express yourself more clearly. 'Cause it's true, you know, if I'm completely unbound and I'm writing a 20-minute song, I can kind of beat around the bush for as long as I need to, and somewhere in there is going to be the meaning. But if I've only got 10 seconds to tell you how I feel,
yeah.
they, you know, those words have to be pretty meaningful.
Yes.
And transparent. And I think that's one word for this record that I feel most accomplished by is its transparency, mm-hmm. and the veil or the facade of the plot driven concept, or just really, you know, predetermined concept, being somewhat thrown out the window. You know, even if it's not received well, for me as a human being, it's a very important. It was important for me to be clear, even with myself, just to get a better gauge on who I am and where I am at this point. People always say that cliche of things being therapeutic, and I wouldn't really know if something is therapeutic or not. Uh-huh. But I can say that I feel accomplished, and I have at least a marginally better understanding of myself.
I think that that comes across in song after song on Migrant, and one of my favorite songs is your lead single, Whisper, and I can see why. It is a lead single. It's a strong song, and it must get the crowd going when you perform it in concert.
Oh, yeah, which is surprising, actually. We did a show in New York. It sold out in advance. It was at a big club, and it was kind of crazy for us. And after the show, one of the guys at our label came up to me and told me that during that song, because this is before the album came out, The crowd was going insane, and my manager turned to the label and yelled out, "This album isn't even out yet," in disbelief of the response that we were getting. And you know, the song had been out for a while,
yeah,
but just the fact that the response, really just the fact that people, A, took the time to go and listen to that new single, and then B, they also are fans of the band, and C, that it was at a sold-out show that these people were they had already found something about that song that spoke to them strongly enough to kind of throw their inhibitions away in the company of 600 or 700 other people and scream these lyrics that were to them very fresh. It's a pretty mind-blowing experience for me, especially because it's really the first time it has it's happened this quick. Usually it takes, you know, a year or two for people to really align themselves with songs on the records that we put out. So it's insane.
But a good kind of insanity, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, I get a lot of music submissions through Popdos, a lot of bands and artists trying to get some exposure. And so I listen to quite a bit of new music, a lot of unsigned bands. And your album was forwarded to me through the editor, Jeff Giles. And just with a little note, he says, "Oh, I like this one." And, you know, so I downloaded the album because he sent me notes like that before. And sometimes I don't agree with it. I'm like, I'm not feeling it on this one. But, you know, I put it on in the background and I was sort of doing emails and listening. And then I just sort of stopped and I started listening to the music. I'm all like, my God, this is actually really, really just strong music. I really like this. And I have to admit that I didn't know your work. And so I went back and I listened to some of your earlier albums, and I'm all like, "Well, this is very different from early EPs." And so I wrote him back. I said, "I want to interview this guy and you know, talk to him a little bit more about his music." And he goes, "Well, here's his contact information through his publicist." So I'm glad we were able to connect and actually talk about your music and your life. Another track on the album is Shame, which was said that it was inspired by James Bond movies. I didn't know that you were such a James Bond fan. You try to compete with Adele?
I think that was it. Is every now and then, I'm trying to think how to say this. I'm not waiting for anyone to bang down the door to get me to do certain things. So in the sense of, you know, there wasn't a symphony or somebody that came to us and said, "Do you want to perform the color spectrum from start to finish and do it with this orchestra and we'll film it and we'll do this?" Mm-hmm. Nobody really came with that idea, so we did it ourselves, and we did it and we made that happen because we wanted to see it. And nobody came and said, "Will you write a theme song for this new spy movie?" Nobody's going to come to me for that. There's no reason to, really. But so for me, it was like, you know, I love that vibe and that feeling of the sort of spy theme song. And in my head, just the title of a movie being Shame, and almost like a 70s era exploitation spy film, like a really poorly made spy film.
The poor man's James Bond or something
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And in my head, it was just, it really did, at a rehearsal one day, write itself. You know, I had my brother just playing this that beat, that side stick beat that kind of starts the song off. Mm-hmm. And from there, I wrote the verse and just had him continue playing that beat. And then I wrote the chorus. And then I just recorded it to my phone and I kept it around. And then I knew that I wanted it to have those, you know, it's a very stylized song in the sense that the way that the strings are arranged is also very attempted to be very period specific to that sort of disco era. Not a lot of harmony to them exactly,
right,
but very much, you know, there, it's always octaves and it's always at a dynamic that doesn't necessarily match what the rest of the band is doing. And so I just wanted in my head to see this theme song, and I've got the whole title sequence played out in my mind when I listened to that song.
Well, I'm sure so. You've worked in filmmaking and certainly on that end, so I could, and editing, so I'm sure you've got it all mapped out.
Yeah, I do. And that is a song that my mother sings on. All of those background vocals, that's my mom.
Oh, it's now all in the family. So you said you had your brother on drums and your mom singing vocals. That's good. You just need to add your dad as your recording engineer, and I think you're all set. You've already answered this question from talking about your experience in New York City, but A lot of times when artists change their styles, musical styles, they run the risk of alienating their fans. So the reaction, it seems like, to the new songs on Migrant has been just amazing, just really just fantastic. And as you tour around the country to promote the album, how's life on the road treating you? Are you enjoying yourself? Are you feeling like the audience is coming out in big droves and the reaction to the new songs is generally really, really positive?
I think so. I think some of the new songs that we play but that are on the album that haven't sort of been debuted in one place or another, I think those people still need time. But the reaction is phenomenal, and the feeling that the band has is phenomenal. Physically, on this tour specifically, we're playing between 2 and 3 hours every night.
Oh, wow.
And we're playing a lot of older music, and I used to really just yell my way through songs, kind of like a baby snake who hasn't really, you know, learned the venom. It's very physically taxing, but it's made so worth it every night by the fact that it, you know, everybody who I guess gets to that point of third party can say, oh, they've made it. They have a moment internally where they say, like, this is actually happening. Like, I might actually have a career. Along, you know, I could potentially do this for my life. And I think that is this tour for us. I think this is a realization for us that's really surprising, because I never thought one way or the other. I kind of just did this and I love doing it. But this tour and this album and the reaction, it's all so surprising and affirming for us that whatever small physical pain we might feel from performing every night, it's drowned out completely by the response and the feeling that we all have at this point in our career.
Yeah, 2 to 3 hour show night after night, and I'm sure you've had days off, but even those days off is just like a recovery time for you. I mean, that's quite a marathon. I mean, that's I can't imagine how your voice holds up night after night. As you probably
just
as you
barely,
say, yeah,
just barely holds on.
So you're going to be I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, so you're going to be at Slim's towards the end of your tour. I hope to catch you guys when you come out
awesome.
Here, and best of luck with the album. I really like it. We're going to promote it certainly when this interview goes up on Popdose. And just want to say it was a real pleasure talking to you.
Likewise, man. I cannot thank you enough for doing this.
Oh, you're very welcome. And hopefully maybe I'll see you at Slim's. That'll be good.
Awesome, man. I will see you there.